Welcome to Onc Live On Air. I'm your host today, Courtney Flaherty. Onc Live On Air is a podcast from Onc Live, which provides oncology professionals the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Onc Live covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, sponsored by Seagen, we had the pleasure of speaking with Bradley J. Monk, MD, FACOG, FACS, and Paolo Tarantino, MD, about several ongoing and planned tumor-agnostic trials evaluating antibody-drug conjugates with novel targets in breast and gynecologic cancers. Dr. Monk is a gynecologic oncologist and the medical director of the Late Stage Clinical Research Program at Florida Cancer Specialists and Research Institute in West Palm Beach. Dr. Tarantino is a researcher at the European Institute of Oncology in Milan, Italy, as well as a clinical research fellow at Dana-Farber Cancer Institute in Boston, Massachusetts. One emerging target of note is B7H4 vedotin. The investigational B7H4 vedotin-directed ADCs SGN-B7H4V and HS20089 are being evaluated in respective phase 1 trials in patients with advanced solid tumors. These agents have generated early efficacy signals in their respective trials. In our exclusive interview, Drs. Monk and Tarantino highlight current research investigating B7H4-directed ADCs, including SGN-B7H4V and HS20089, in multiple solid tumor types, spotlighted several other promising ADCs in early development for gynecologic cancers, and speculated on future research needed to clarify unanswered questions regarding the optimal use and sequencing of ADCs in breast cancer. What's the rationale for investigating B7H4-directed vedotins, and what unmet needs could they potentially address?
There are so many ADCs that we can't even count. Can you imagine? Many of them are very tolerable, and a few of them have really unprecedented activity. One of the ones that I'm most excited about is B7H4. B7H4 is an immune checkpoint ligand expressed at low levels in normal tissues, but upregulated in many solid tumors, including breast, ovarian, and endometrial cancer, which show high expression of B7H4. So the idea is to create antibody-drug conjugates against these, what we call tumor antigens, and to investigate adverse reactions and safety, and now ultimately schedule. So one of the targets that I'm very interested in, because they've shown to be effective, in fact, we have tisotumab vedotin approved in endometrial cancer, is the vedotin opportunity called B7H4 vedotin. And the vedotin is the combination of the linker and the ligand. And this was studied and presented at ASCO by one of my future colleagues, Cesar Perez, who's part of the Sarah Cannon Research Institute organization, but works in Florida at Lake Nona Cancer Center in Orlando. It's very exciting because it was very active, number one. That's what we're trying to do, is, you know, help patients who have these very serious diseases. There was breast cancer activity in 7 of 28 patients. And again, these were treated at many different doses, and 4 of 20 ovarian cancer patients. They even saw a CR in endometrial cancer and some activity in lung biliary tract. And these were early, deep, and durable responders. So very, very exciting, very, very encouraging. The adverse reactions have been well documented for vedotin. As you know, fatigue, neuropathy, and bone marrow suppression, with low levels of diarrhea. Interestingly, alopecia is rare, and pneumonitis is rare. The key point of this abstract presented by Dr. Perez is to look at the schedule. So the two schedules that they looked at were 1 in 8 on a 21-day cycle, or every other week on a 4-week cycle. So not only did this abstract sort of tell us very preliminarily what the activity is and support the safety profile of what we've seen, the idea is that probably the every other week on a 4-week schedule can move forward, although both schedules were active.
Now, speaking to the other study of the B7H4 vedotin, were there similar results seen here?
There were two studies, and they were very complementary and showed very similar results. This is not the only B7H4 in the clinic. I can count at least three others. They're showing similar results, but again, they're not the same. It's obviously too early to compare HS20089 as a second, but I'm excited about the target, but I'm really excited about the vedotin opportunity because that linker and that payload is established and FDA approved in several tumor types. And so we have some confidence there about its activity, but also the safety profile.
Circling back to B7H4V, if the data on this agent, you know, continue to be positive, I know it's very early, but what potential future role could you see for this agent within gynecologic oncology?
Drug development's tough. It's tough because it's expensive. It's tough because it's slow. And it's tough because it's competitive. But the ultimate goal is to bring these medicines to the clinic and gain FDA approval. The fastest way, obviously, is to do it through accelerated approval and maybe even in the same study, do a phase 2 to phase 3 design. And then ultimately, as I said, it's tough, so you have to optimize the dose. But there are techniques, and we do these within the GOG Foundation, where we can identify the optimized dose. We can ultimately do some sort of assessment to get accelerated approval and then carry generally in a randomized fashion the study forward to gain full approval. There are so many antibody drug conjugates, and as you know, folate receptor alpha is another target. We're studying it not only in ovarian cancer, where it got accelerated approval in November and ultimately confirmed at ASCO in a phase 3 trial called Mirasol, which is yet to be published and ultimately will flip that label from an accelerated to full approval. DS6000, another antibody drug conjugate, presented at ESMO with sensational, maybe that's overstated, I don't think it is, if you were to look at the data, sensational activity and tolerability. I also see that these sponsors, now all of a sudden they have multiple assets, okay? And so they have to prioritize them. And again, drug development is tough.
Could you just provide an overview of some of the latest ESMO data on this agent, SGN-B7H4V, and its potential as an ADC in breast cancer?
I think it's very interesting to see several ADCs targeting not only the standard target in breast oncology, they are HER2 and TROP2, but also novel targets. And B7H4 is very intriguing because it's an immune checkpoint ligand that is expressed at low levels in normal tissue, but it's upregulated in several types of solid tumors, including breast cancer and several others. And there are a number of ADCs that have been explored targeting this antigen, and an interesting agent was presented at ESMO, the first in human phase 1 data from SGN-B7H4V, an ADC comprising a B7H4-directed monoclonal antibody conjugated to auristatin via protease cleavable linker. And we have seen other ADCs with a vedotin payload being successful, such as, for instance, enfortumab vedotin, or in breast oncology, dizetamab vedotin, and now this other vedotin ADC that is showing promising activity. And in this phase 1 presentation at ESMO, there were 86 patients included in two different cohorts, one that included day 1 and day 8 dosing on a 21-day cycle, and one included instead day 1 and day 15 dosing on a 28-day cycle. And in general, across both cohorts, the most common side effects that were observed were fatigue, peripheral sensory neuropathy, and cytopenia, similar to other vedotin ADCs. However, the cohort receiving every 3 weeks dosing experienced more toxicity, and in particular, two grade 5 toxicities, one due to hypoglycemia and neutropenia, and the other one related to febrile neutropenia. And therefore, all patients that are being now included in the trial are being transitioned to the 4 weeks dosing. In terms of activity, there were responses observed in different tumor types. Most of the patients included in this trial had either ovarian cancer or hormone receptor positive or triple negative breast cancer, but also other tumor types. And in general, 7 of 28 patients with advanced breast cancer responded to a drug, but also 4 out of 20 patients with advanced ovarian cancer. And there were responses also for endometrial, lung, and biliary tract cancers, among others. In general, I do believe that we need to see more from this agent, but these first-in-human results are quite promising.
How significant is the choice of target or payload in terms of, you know, treatment efficacy, resistance, and patient outcomes here?
Yeah, what we're seeing in many solid tumors is that there are obviously several antibody drug conjugates in development. And obviously, they attack different targets, and that's fine. We don't really understand the overlap. And the hope is that there will be exclusivity, meaning one target will not overlap with the other target. The challenge, though, is if the payloads are similar, such as an anti-tubulin or a topoisomerase inhibitor, that there'll probably be cross-resistance. So this idea of sequencing ADCs in at least gynecologic cancers, what I treat, is very intriguing. I think we're going to get there. Probably the most excitement, at least in GYN cancers, is HER2. There's a lot of excitement about HER2. T-DXd, trastuzumab deruxtecan, now has breakthrough therapy designation in several tumor types for 3+. And as of September 20th, in cervix and endometrial, it's NCCN recommended at a level 2A. That's very exciting. But there are other HER2 antibody drug conjugates. DB1303 is another one presented by Dr. Kathleen Moore at Oklahoma at ESMO, which is very, very exciting. So I think we're going to have to sort of sort out which, as an example, B7H3, HER2, or TROP2, because again, there are several TROP2. Sacituzumab, obviously, is the furthest ahead and is FDA approved in breast cancer.
So in general, we're realizing that the target expression is not all the picture. The payload is very important. And this is because the payload, of course, is delivered to the tumor to a homing effect of the ADC, but some part of it is also detached from the antibody in the circulation, and there is kind of an effect of prolonged release of chemotherapy that is very important for the efficacy of this agent. And then some part of the payload for some of the ADCs can bind to albumin and continue to circulate in the blood, and I think this effect is not completely characterized and is very, very important for the activity and toxicity of these agents. And so in general, I feel that choosing the antibody is important, choosing the target is important, but the payload is also critical. And we're starting to see some data showing that mechanism of resistance to ADCs can be related to both the target and the payload. And so I think we need to see ADCs in a broad way. We need to understand that each part of the ADC is extremely important. The linker, of course, that determines the stability of the compound and where the payload is released. And so I do feel that in drug development, where we think of developing new ADCs, we don't only have to think of expanding the range of targets that we're looking at, but also expanding the range of payloads and probably also refining the linking technology. Because, for instance, the DXd platform, T-DXd, Dato-DXd, HER3-DXd is so successful also thanks to a very interesting linker that allows for an intermediate stability for some of the target, some of the payload to reach the tumor, and some of it, once again, to spill and have a broader activity, even in heterogeneous tumors. So each part of the ADC is extremely important, and we're learning this day by day.
Specifically talking about sort of the sequencing of these agents and then the larger armamentarium, what research is really necessary to clarify, you know, second-line sequencing within this space?
The sequencing may be possibly one of the most complex topics in breast oncology right now, and in particular ADC sequencing, because we are having more and more antibody drug conjugates that are either approved or for which we expect an approval soon. Several of these share either the targeted antigen or the payload. For instance, we have both trastuzumab deruxtecan and T-DM1 targeting HER2, and we know that they can work one after the other, but instead we also have two ADCs, trastuzumab deruxtecan and sacituzumab govitecan, that share a topoisomerase 1 payload, and we still don't have much data of the two utilized in sequence. There are several abstracts that look at the sequencing of the two ADCs, and hopefully will clarify if we can use one after the other. But of course, it will be very important also to understand mechanisms of resistance in order to optimize the use of these ADCs in sequence, but also to develop the new generation of ADCs. I do hope that we can achieve more differentiation in the payload of the ADCs, because there are many promising topoisomerase 1 ADCs in the pipeline, But I do believe that we need more than microtubule inhibitors and topo one inhibitors. We need to move to the next generation of payloads. And of course, there is a role potentially also for payloads that have been shown to work in other diseases, such as alkylators, or also some microtubule inhibitors that may have a role. In general, there's a lot going on in the field of ADCs. Sequencing will become a critical topic in the future. But I do believe that this is a good problem to have because we're starting to have more and more treatments available for our patients, and we'll definitely figure out the best way to sequence them in order to improve their activity in sequence and minimize cross-resistance and toxicity.
Now we can kind of move on to discussing sort of the field of ADCs and ADC data at ESMO more generally. So obviously this is constantly evolving with novel targets. Were there any exciting emerging targets for ADCs and breast cancer that you encountered at the meeting?
I would say beyond novel targets, of course, it's also important to fine tune the targeting of traditional targets with ADCs. And for instance, it was interesting to see some more data to targeting agent SKB4 that's treating for both hormones at positive and triple negative metastatic breast cancer. And then in the HER2 positive disease, it was extremely interesting to see the high intracranial activity of T-DXd in patients enrolled in DESTINY-Breast01, 02, and 03 trials. There was this pooled analysis presented by Sarah Hervis showing up to 40% and more intracranial response rate with a prolonged intracranial progression-free survival, including in patients with active brain metastasis, untreated brain metastasis. So that was very promising, and I think it will also inform the use of T-DXd in clinical practice. Whereas it was slightly disappointing, I would say, to see the final overall survival from the TULIP trial. That was a phase 3 trial testing trastuzumab duocarmazine, a novel HER2 ADC that showed prolonged progression-free survival compared to traditional treatment, but it was associated with ocular and pulmonary toxicity and no improvement in overall survival at the final analysis. So I think promising data on one side, some other disappointing, but in general, there's a lot of movement in the field, and I do expect in the next months and years to see some more. And finally, we need to mention, of course, datopotamab deruxtecan. This is an agent for which we have seen important phase 1 trials that have been presented, including in the first-line triple-negative breast cancer setting, where datopotamab deruxtecan plus durvalumab was associated with extremely high objective response rate, up to almost 80%, with a PFS that exceeded 1 year, which is very remarkable for metastatic triple-negative breast cancer, a highly aggressive disease. And also, we have seen important phase 3 data presented in the TROPION-Breast01 phase 3 trial, where datopotamab deruxtecan improved progression-free survival compared with traditional chemotherapy. And we do expect it may become an available option for treating patients with pretreated or hormone-receptor-positive metastatic breast cancer in the future.
Any other important unanswered questions or unmet needs surrounding the optimal use of these agents?
Absolutely, we need to get these medications approved earlier lines of therapy and in combinations, and then pivot to several tumor types. And again, you see that with trastuzumab deruxtecan, you see that with sacituzumab, you're going to see that with mirvetuximab. But I think that's sort of the platform. Generally, late phase development is done in later lines, but ultimately, again, earlier lines, combinations, and several tumor types is how the life cycle needs to be managed to help the most patients as we can.
One major unmet need for which we're starting to see promising data is, of course, brain metastasis. So we know that brain metastasis, when they're detected, they signal a worse prognosis. These patients are hard to treat, sometimes require extensive local treatments, and having systemic treatments that work in the brain is something that we extremely need. And we're starting to see T-DXd has shown promising intracranial activity. Trastuzumab govitecan is being studied also for brain metastasis, and soon we are starting a trial called Database to see if Dato-DXd also is active for brain metastasis. But I think the second major unmet need is curing patients that have curable disease. And so taking these ADCs to the early stage setting where we know that they may potentially have the biggest impact on the treatment course. because we could be able to eradicate minimal residual disease, hopefully better than chemotherapy, since we have shown that ADCs outperform chemotherapy in a metastatic setting. I do believe that if tested appropriately in the early stage setting, either as neoadjuvant treatment or adjuvant treatment, they may improve outcomes also in that setting. And there are several trials ongoing. For instance, PDXD has been testing the DESTINY-Breast05 and DESTINY-Breast11 trial, Sacituzumab-govitecan in the SASHA trial or Optimize-RD, and Dato-DXD in the TROPION-Breast03 trial. So many trials ongoing in the early stage setting, and I do believe that they will target a major unmet need in breast oncology and hopefully deliver important benefits for our patients.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air, sponsored by Seagen. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OncLive. On Facebook, like us at OncLive, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms, so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you're there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.